All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado Tony Pimico.
And Psychic Tom Paget. Ready to go with them.
I didn't throw the merge of your crystal ball off, did I?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
All right. Well, right off the bat, I want to talk about one of my favorite stories of this week, and it involves some audio, so let me just play the audio first.
Dana White, you know, does not matter for this sport, but he's got one injury from this sport. You know, and for him to say, the best part of the best part of UFC Brooklyn was the flight home.
What was the highlight for you?
Plane ride home.
You are a private jet, bro. Shut the fuck up. You're on a private jet. Most people, that would be the highlight of their life. Forget the night. You are on a private jet. Of course, it's the highlight of your night. This guy's fighting in the cage, getting hurt. Jim Miller probably. Who's the leg kicks? Someone got their fucking leg.
Yeah, Jim Miller.
Yeah. He owes an apology to all those motherfuckers. That's bullshit. Shut your fucking mouth. Are the rest of the fighters not seeing this? I don't understand how they just take it up the ass all the time. It's fucking bullshit. It really is. For what we do, for what the amount, like, fuck, man. Ellenberger got elbowed. He was unconscious for a while. I was like, fuck, I don't even want to fight. Do I want to do this? I almost left the fucking arena. I was like, fuck this. And he's going to say that, the best part is the ride home? Shut the fuck up. Are you kidding me? Go fuck yourself. Don't ever talk about a fighter like that. You're not a fighter. You don't do it. You don't know. All those guys.
So, that was Raging Al Iaquinta. I don't know if you could hear it very well, guys, but he basically just reiterated what I was saying in my open FU to Dana White. He did a big interview with Ariel Helwani. He did spout off a little bit after his win the other night against Diego Sanchez, knocked him right out in the first round. And, of course, you know, he's had some history with saying some abrasive things towards the UFC people over the years, Dana White. In particular, but I really went for the jugular this time, and Ariel's interview is tremendous. I mean, he covers a lot of issues, weight cutting, unions. He talks about the fight, of course, the lack of bonuses that he's been getting, not getting, and just unbelievable that it's almost perfect scenario too, because he talked at the end about, you know, possibly getting involved in some type of fight union or fighter union or association. And imagine that, you know, imagine Dana White having to argue with Al Iaquinta, who is just as foul-mouthed and abrasive as the Bald Father, but he's a little bit younger, you know. And I think.
And I.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I think he had wrong. Anger.
Yeah.
After what he did to Sanchez, no one had done that.
Right.
No one. I mean, I know Sanchez is a spent bullet, but still, no one had ever destroyed him like that.
Right. And, you know, it all started, I believe, with the knee. And
he should have got fight of the night, knockout of the night, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, they've gone away from knockout of the night because they don't want to appear like they're they're encouraging knockouts, but that's one of the things that Al centered on in some of his argument. He said that basically the bonus system is a way to control fighters. And he made a good point, too, is that it shouldn't even be called a bonus because it's like life-changing for most people. But that clip I just played, he was criticizing Dana for what he said about UFC Brooklyn, which wasn't the same event here. It's a different event. But apparently Dana White said, you know, the best part of that was the plane ride home. And so Al was like, fuck that. You know, that's the highlight of most people's lives, flying on a private jet. And, you know, he's just going out there and just basically dissing all the fighters. That actually, a lot of them got injured. You know, they had to serve suspensions like they usually do when they get hurt. So for him to say something like that is just ridiculous. I can remember his name, Josh Koscheck, getting injured so bad he couldn't even get on a regular plane. because of his orbital bone. They refused the ride home on the plane because of that. That was a story we talked about years ago. So, just unbelievable, but awesome to hear somebody, you know, put it all on the line. After the fight, he said...
Yeah, that was the power of a powerful left jab.
Yeah. And you know, couldn't have happened to a better person for him to attack Dana White like that. I loved it. And I actually tweeted to him today that I love to hear fighters stand up to the UFC brass, and sounds like a lot like what I said. And I put the link to the open FU to Dana White about the Holly Holm situation. But the fight itself was the co-main event of a great card. Diego basically just kind of walked into a couple punches. He got knocked down first, got back up, and then got taken right out. I think it was a right hand. But, yeah. Tremendous power, energy, and calmness. I mean, for 2 years out of the cage, for him to come in, you know, calm, collected, and, you know, ready to mow somebody down, that's good stuff. But it all started with the knee injury that Al had, and apparently the UFC said to him, well, we'll cover stem cell treatment for $15,000, but we're not going to do anything more than that. And then, you know, he tried to get everything arranged for something better, some real surgery, and he even offered, hey, you can take it out of my next purse, you know, I just need you to pay for it, and they wouldn't do it. So a lot of help from a doctor that volunteered a lot of his help and time and energy to do it. And he didn't really mention surgery at all, so I don't know if he actually got any surgery, but he got a lot of other stuff done, and you know, he worked on it for 2 years, had no problems with it in the cage this weekend, and just demolished Diego. So one of the more interesting parts of the interview was Ariel Helwani kind of trying to get him to, you know, really talk about how much this has got to eat him up, being, you know, now one of the most talked about athletes in this division here, and he can't do anything with it because he's probably going to get blacklisted. You know, so, and he said basically, Ariel asked him, you know, is it possible that we won't see you in the cage for a while? And he said, no, more like probable. So he's standing by his guns, and he doesn't care what consequences there are, because he's got some real estate to sell, apparently. So, good stuff there. But the main event was a little bit less of a competition, even though Artem Lobov lasted all five rounds and, you know, walked through a lot of punishment. That's the old thing that I'm always criticizing a lot of fighters for, is, you know, you got to keep the hands up. And Artem just kept one hand low almost the entire fight. He had one hand by his waist. In some parts of the fight, he had both hands by his waist. And, you know, a couple head kicks here and there, some hooks, and Cub Swanson had him close to getting knocked out a couple times. But, you know, it was a fight that was basically put together because Artem just flapped his jaws and got a lot of controversy going, and just said something about Cub Swanson not even being a man. And so it was interesting to see them shake hands and, you know, give each other props after the fight. But it's a fight that probably wouldn't have normally happened under different circumstances. But, you know, Artem talked enough. He got himself the fight. I don't know. It wasn't very technical. Yeah, I was surprised he took what he did, though. He took some mean head kicks and mean hooks and just didn't go down. Somehow. Stayed up. Did you watch that one, Tom? Did we lose Tom?
Yes. Oh, there and Artem just has that look about him that he could take a good shot.
Yeah.
And he proved it.
Apparently so. And Ovin St. Preux also got a pretty big win. He ended up with a shoulder choke, I guess they're calling it, in the second round, 2 minutes and 11 seconds into that one. Marcos Rogério de Lima was the loser on the end of that. And Ovin's had some words for Dana afterwards, too, a little bit less abrasive. But he said, you know, let's sign that contract. And he's like, Dana knows what I'm talking about. So he also used the phrase that I like to use for, you know, the fighter pay situation. Show me the money. Show me the money from Jerry Maguire. Good stuff. One of the most entertaining fights I saw on this card, I thought it was great, was John Dodson against Eddie Wineland. And Eddie Wineland, first off, I think that guy needs a couple more tattoos. What do you think, Tom? He's got the Yakuza starter kit. But, yeah, John Dodson, so fast. Eddie, after the first round, comes back to his corner and just shakes his head at his corner guys and says, "Wow, that guy's fast." And I've never
seen... The crowd was not too appreciative of Dodson's efforts.
No, I mean, he was fighting a tactical fight and wasn't really putting himself in much danger, but like Eddie said, you know, he's so fast, he just kept connecting and connecting. And, you know, after going against Demetrius Johnson a few times and not being able to get that belt, he moved up, and usually guys struggle a little bit, you know, going up a weight class, but he made Eddie Wineland look like an amateur. Cut him all open at the end of the fight, by the end of the fight, and it was funny because at the post-fight interview, first one I saw, he said, you know, he was asked about not having a mark on his face, and he goes, "I got one right here over my eye. I got hit once." But yeah, good stuff there, and he should be mowing through people at that division if he keeps that kind of effort up. And Eddie's, as Tom says, is no cheap date. Yeah, he's got a great history in the cage, and especially in the WEC before it got folded into the UFC.
I kind of get the feeling his stock took a pretty big hit.
Yeah.
With this one.
And then Stephen Ray had the comeback of the night. Not sure if he got a bonus for it, but I think he deserved it if he didn't. Took out Joe Lauzon after getting his butt whipped in the first round. And Joe admittedly said, you know, "I burned myself out in that first round," and, you know, gave props to Ray. But you got to wonder how long Joe's going to stick with it, if that's, you know, going to keep happening, where he's only got one round in him like that. I mean,
did you notice, Rich, that Joe did not throw one kick that I can remember through that whole three-round fight, and he had the height advantage?
Yeah.
Well, he just had nothing in the later rounds.
He's been more of an elbow type of guy, but, you know, more than kicks and punches. He throws a lot of elbows and he does a lot of submissions, but this time, yeah, he didn't throw any kicks. That's a good point. And then, speaking of elbows, Mike Perry demolished Jake Ellenberger, and I had just tuned into the card right after that fight, so I didn't get to see it live, but I saw the replays, and, you know, that's the type of elbow I'm always advocating more of, because when I started throwing elbows after getting over the stigma of, you know, going from boxing to mixed martial arts and being able to throw elbows, that's one of the first type of elbows I wanted to throw, is it's kind of like a boxing punch, but, you know, you're just using it real quick and you connect right to the chin like that, and it works. We found that out the other night, and Ellenberger, unfortunately, was out for a while. I don't know about any post-fight tests or anything. Hopefully they came out all right. I know Diego had one. He had to have a CAT scan, and it turned out all right. But Ellenberger was in trouble there for a couple minutes.
Yeah, Ellenberger is 1-4 in his last five fights.
Yeah.
You got to wonder where he's going.
And who knows if they'll throw him out. I mean, usually they throw guys out for losing a couple in a row. So. And then, of course, our former guest had talk about kicks, Tom. First kick of the fight, and he was out of it. He busted his ankle. First kick of the fight, the guy kicks him in the leg, and he steps wrong, coming back down on the ankle, and he couldn't move. Couldn't move around the cage, and yeah, he gave it a shot, but unanimous decision win for Taylor's ladies there. And, you know, Sam tried, but, yeah, he just couldn't string punches together and just kept getting kicked over and over again. Another thing I'd like to see more of in MMA. And then we had another comeback with Brandon Moreno. I believe he got a bonus. Coming back against Dustin Ortiz for a rear naked choke submission in the second round after getting his butt kicked in the first round. And that was a great effort, for sure. Then we had Scott Holtzman beating Michael McBride by unanimous decision. That was an interesting fight. Both of those guys threw a lot of shots at each other and were fighting with their hands low a lot. They were both exhausted by the end of it. But Holtzman did more in the throughout the fight to get the victory there. And then Danielle Taylor, a relative newcomer to the sport, used some real smart fighting, gauging her distance and stringing punches together. And even though Jessica had a little bit more reach than her, Danielle just gutted it out and got the win and looked good doing it. And then third fight of the night, Alexis Davis beating Cindy Dandois by unanimous decision. Second fight of the night, Brian Barberina beat Joe Proctor by TKO for every first round there. 3 minutes and 30 seconds into that one. And then with just 36 seconds left in the first round, Hector Sandoval got the first win of the night against Matt Schnell by knockout from punching. And night before that, we had Strauss versus Pitbull on Bellator 178. It was a pretty decent card. We had AJ McKee starting off the night with a beautiful head kick knockout of Dominic Mazzotta. That was just 1 minute and 15 seconds into the first round there. We also had Sayad Awad getting the unanimous decision over Ryan Quinn. That was a very technical fight back and forth. And Alima.
Very good grappling by Awad. I mean, he really put on a clinic against a high level BJJ guy.
Right. Yeah, it looked good doing it. And then Alima Lay McFarlane got a quick armbar over Jessica Middleton. That was 2 minutes and 15 seconds into the first round. But the big fight of the night, of course, was the fourth installment of Patricio Freire, otherwise known as Pitbull, against Daniel Strauss. And the first round was very uneventful. Patricio was kind of playing the John Jones game, where he was trying to catch Strauss's hand for every punch and kind of parry it away. Daniel really didn't have a chance to get close enough to do any damage there. And then in the second round, he got caught relatively quickly in a guillotine choke. It's 37 seconds into that one, and that was it. Wrapped it up nice and tight and choked him right out. And we won't go through the rest of them. Not a lot of big names on the rest of the card, but lots of boxing to talk about, too. I did not get to watch the boxing, but Andre Berto got KTFO'd. I did see that.
Yes, he did. And you know what? I have a colleague of mine in the boxing world, and he can be opinionated when there's a fighter that he is rooting for. The guy can do no wrong. When it's the opponent or somebody he doesn't like, the guy can do no right. You know? He would continually bash Manny Pacquiao, and then every fight, he'd pick Pacquiao to lose. When Pacquiao had that very controversial loss to Timothy Bradley, he along with the two judges, had it for Bradley, because that was just, you know, his way. So in this fight, he was like, am I the only one picking Berto? And we're all like, yeah, pretty much, because Berto's not going to win. I mean, I saw the fight in my mind, and I said the only way, and I said on the show last week, you know, Porter, if he comes in and Berto doesn't give him anything to think about, like if you go to Porter's fights that he lost, Cal Brook, Keith Thurman, or other fights that he didn't look fantastic, you know, it's because the guy was getting a jab in his face, you know, the guy was forcing him to bounce, but looked very amateurish, you know. But when he had guys like when he was fighting Paulie Malignaggi, at those fights he looked really good. He came forward like a freight train, and I said, if Berto doesn't use that jab to hold him off, what's going to happen is Porter's going to come in like a freight train, and he's really going to bring it to him. And with Berto's, you know, getting older and his shoulder problems, I think he lost a lot of the zip on that jab. It's like a pitcher that would throw 98 miles an hour,
had a couple shoulder surgeries, and now he's only growing about 91, 92. You know, unless he learns how to use his secondary stuff, his career's pretty much over. You know, Porter brought it in. It was an ugly fight, you know, but he fought the way he had to.
And so this guy was on Facebook and basically just, if I wanted to watch a barroom brawl, I'd go to, you know, fourth and whatever, and, you know, just watch the drunks fight. This is not boxing, whatever. And I was like, I'm thinking, you know, there's a couple of guys out of our gym that he highly respected because they were out of our gym. Myself being one of them, Garrett Wilson being the other one. We both basically made our living on fighting as very aggressive, rough inside fighters. So now you call us barroom brawlers too? Or it's only Berto, or is it only Porter because you're rooting for the other guy?
Well, what is his critic's experience? What was his record before he quit?
He was an amateur fighter. I don't know his amateur record. But he hangs around the gym a lot. He's a writer. But if you read his stuff, that, you know, he's a lot of opinion in it.
I'm surprised, because the reason I ask that, I mean, you'd think he would know better. I mean, I don't care if you only had one amateur fight. You would think that you would know better than to talk like that.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes people are sometimes overly opinionated, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I read other boxing scribes. You know, some of them that had some experience, some of them that didn't. And, you know, they will sometimes get overly opinionated. I'm going to put myself under the bus right now. And Rich will back me up on my own throwing myself under the bus here. For years, you know, I kind of cooled off after his, you know, death a few years ago. But Rich will tell you right now, I was a big-time Hector Camacho basher. I was not a fan. You know, when we had his son on, you know, I offered the condolences for the loss of his father, and I didn't come out and say what I thought of his father as a fighter, because I was never impressed. You know, it was, you know, run, and, you know, throw these little pity-pat punches and run, and get so many gift decisions, you know. You know, the Ray Boom Mancini fight was a travesty. And then, you know, you had other fights out there, and, you know, the one that goaded me more than anything, you know, and it wasn't really his fault, jumped in there, and he took advantage of a 40-year-old Sugar Ray Leonard, and that, you know, just really just burned me up. But then on my 21st birthday, 6 months later, you know, he suffered for that, and karma was a bitch when he stepped in against the prime Oscar De La Hoya and took a 12-round shellacking.
There you go. Revenge comes in many forms.
I mean, there's me. I'm a fighter. I had 30-plus fights, and, you know, I'm a boxing writer and all that, and I consider myself ethical, and I consider myself honest, but when you were putting me on, you know, the podium, and you threw that name in front of me, I became very critical.
Yeah, some people bring that out of you. Well, Porter, too, I mean, he kind of does have such a high output that it makes him look like more of a brawler, even though he might be thinking in there, hey, I'm fighting the tactical fight. He just looks like he's swinging for the fences because he's just got such a, you know, a high work rate in the ring. But he got the knockout, TKO, the 10th round, 9th round, something like that. Hey, Tony said he was going to quit on a stool, but I think you got the rounds pretty close. So, it was good stuff. And then Jermell Charlo also stayed undefeated.
That was a very impressive knockout.
I did see that knockout, the footage of that one. I saw that. It was just, I was going on Twitter, and there it was, top of the Twitter tweets there, top of the list, and I think I retweeted it, so it was that good. It was good stuff. Just basically laid him right out. I think he had knocked him down earlier in the fight or earlier in that round.
Yeah, I think it was like the third round he knocked him down.
And so the end came in the fifth, I believe. That was for the WBC World Super Welterweight title, and Charles Hatley falls to 26-1-1, and Charlo stays undefeated, 28-0. Then our former guest, Amanda Serrano, set a record here with her win for the WBO World Female Bantamweight title over Diana Santana. Amanda is 31-1-1 now, Santana 35-8. 35-8, and it was a TKO win for Amanda, and I think it's 5 or 6 different weight classes now she's got world title in, which is a new record. Nobody else has done that before, so big props to her for that one. And I want to call Ronda Rousey. You got to fight with her now. we'll see. We also had another one, another big card for a lot of titles out in Carson, California. We had, first off, Oscar Valdez at featherweight, undefeated at 21-0, stayed that way against Miguel Mariaga, falls to 25-1, that was for the WBO featherweight title. Jesse Magdaleno at super bantamweight also stays undefeated, beating Adelson Dos Santos, 18-2, for the WBO world super bantamweight title. Magdaleno's 24-0. And we had super middleweights, Gilberto Ramirez, who's 34-0. Also stays undefeated, getting the WBO World Super Middleweight title from Max Bursack, who is 33-4-1. That was a unanimous decision. Magdaleno won by KO, and also Valdez got a unanimous decision. I don't know if I mentioned that. All right. And we had another big fight overseas, a couple of them. Over in the UK, middleweight Martin Murray, 34-4-1, beat Gabriel Rosado, 23-10, for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Middleweight title. That was a majority decision there.
Yeah, and I heard the scoring of that was funny and possibly a little slanted, over the pond, because obviously I didn't see the fight. I was following it online as it was happening, and from all the accounts I heard, it was a pretty close, pretty competitive fight. So when you hear close and competitive and it's overseas and one fighter is a hometown fighter, you just assume he's going to get the decision. So the fact that it was a majority decision kind of lends me to the credence that maybe Rosado maybe earned the fight. But then the one judge had Murray winning all but one round. You know, home cooking, huh? Yeah, a little bit.
Right. Also on that card, we had Rocky Fielding, 23-1, beating John Ryder, 24-3, for the vacant BBBFC British Super Middleweight title. That was a split decision. And the Rosado-Murray fight was also for the WBA Intercontinental Middleweight title. Lightweights also on that card. Lee Appleyard, 10-2, losing to Sean Dodd, who's 12-2 with one draw. That was for the vacant Commonwealth and British Empire lightweight title. So that was it for that card for good stuff. Let's see what else we got. No, we had another one overseas. Some big names. Michael Grant ended up losing by KO over there in Poland. We talked about this one last week. Krzysztof Zimnik, 21-1-1, beating Grant, who's 48-6 now. Don't know which round, because BoxRec doesn't tell you that anymore. Let's see. Our Jesus fights of the week. There's two Jesuses on the same card here in Baja California, Mexico. Alessandro Rigucini beat the first Jesus. He stays at 16-0. Jesus Antonio Rios falls to 36-9-1. That was a TKO loss for him. For the vacant WBF World Lightweight title and the vacant IBF International Lightweight title. And then Antonio Lozado Jr., 36-2, beat out Jesus Eduardo Soto, 12-9-1, with a TKO there. Okay. No, we got another one. Here it is. Arthur Abraham losing to Robin Krasniqi over in Germany. Krasniqi goes up to 46-4. Abraham 45-5. And then also the co-main event. That was a unanimous decision, by the way, for Krasniqi. And then the heavyweights, Tom Schwartz, he stayed undefeated at 18-0. Adnan Redzavic falls to 18-1. That was a knockout win for Schwartz and for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Heavyweight title. I believe that's it for the big, big fights from last week.
We had a card on, I think it was last night. Yeah, last night was Tuesday, right?
Yep.
On FS1. And, early fight was I don't even gonna attempt to say the guy's name, Russian fighter. They called him the Wolf.
Oh yeah, I remember
he
him.
He was so hairy, George the Animal Steel would say he's pretty hairy.
Yeah.
all over. I mean, just almost on his forehead. Wow.
Yeah.
We kept talking about him.
I do remember that now.
Yeah. The Wolf. Tom had told me to turn on the TV just to see the guy. He's got that Wolfman's.
The unanimous decision looked pretty impressive. And then the main event, fighter Lara, I don't remember his first name. I thought he was originally related with Sarani Lara, but no, this fighter I believe was from like Dominican Republic or maybe Colombia. And he's been 10 pounds overweight, so they had to put him in with a different opponent. And yeah, no, kind of was not good for him
because
he ended up getting his arse kicked.
Yeah, how about that guy? He said he was working out in the gym the day before, got the call. You ready? That was impressive. That was a statement. But what do you think about that lack of professionalism? I mean, it's not like he signed for the fight a week before. And I felt so bad for his opponent. You know, they interviewed the opponent. Imagine how he felt.
Yeah, you worked hard, you know. That's how I kind of felt bad for, you know, my fighter Potato Head. You know, when he couldn't get about for that police show because he worked so hard, you know, with those two. He put a lot of time in, and it was like, oh, well, yeah, you were kind of on the back burner. You were kind of like standby. It's like, well, you know, gee, thanks, you know.
Did you just call him Potato Head?
Fighters was like, yeah, we could have got you one for the police.
Hey, Tony, what about that heavyweight fight? Do you have any comments on the condition of the of one of the contestants?
Which heavyweight fight was that? Yeah, I do. I thought the one they showed, like, the highlight of, or...
Yeah,
The guy that looked like a poor man's Butterbean?
I knew you'd have a colorful description. That's why I wanted to.
I was trying to think. I was like, what fight would he be talking about? Then I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, I know exactly what he's talking about. Because I was putting some away at that time. And they're like, oh, yeah, and there's like a fill-in or a clip or whatever. And I looked in there, I was like, oh, my God.
You know, in football, you at least have a uniform. And you kind of expect your defensive linemen to have big boiler bellies. It doesn't really have a negative effect. But in boxing, really?
Sure.
Really? Where are we going here?
I mean, yeah, it was like refrigerator parody.
Yeah.
You know what? It was funny. It's funny you say that because you know what just popped in my mind? I'm going back about a good 10 years ago because I had just started doing some stuff for Fight News Unlimited at the time. I don't even think I was doing the podcast yet. But I had gone down to a fight in Philadelphia. It was Father's Day weekend, so, you know, I got my dad, me and him were sitting front row. And at the time, Michael Spinks was sitting at my feet, and then I moved down a little bit. I was sitting with Tex Cobb, talking to him. Funny guy. So after the main event was over, that was Harry Yorgi. Harry fought the main event, and a great fight. And then afterwards, they had two walkout fights, which I still cover. So I'm over talking to my friend Willie Gibbs, former NABF middleweight champion. And I put the fight that's about to be the last of the night. And it was a guy out of Philadelphia with an extremely padded record that was still padded. batting him. He was like 35-0 with 32 knockouts at the time, but he was still basically fighting 4 and 6 rounds. You know, he hadn't stepped up competition yet after 35 professional fights. And the guy he was fighting was like 6'8", like 270, and he was something along the lines of like 5'20" or something ridiculous. And I'm sitting there with Willie, and I'm talking to him, and Willie goes, "Tony, don't you have to cover this fight?" And I showed him my pad, and I had one word written on it, that word, timber. I said, "Willie, I already did it." And I'm sitting there talking to him, and you hear, "Thud, ooh, ba-boom." I told you.
Hey, speaking of Harry Yorgi, has he been active lately at all?
No, Harry hasn't been. I still see him on Facebook from time to time. I haven't seen him in person probably in a good year or so. I forgot that you and I had gone to his fight that time.
Yeah.
And, no, Harry has been fighting. I know he's been working. And the last picture I saw of him, he didn't look like he was in fighter shape. I'm sure he could get back inside.
Mm-hmm. You know, looks like maybe he's lost his passion.
Yeah, and you know what? Hey, Harry was an exciting guy to watch. Put an effort every time. You know, that fight we went to see him in was a good fight. It was a rematch.
Yeah.
They fought a good one the first time. They fought a better one the second time. And but you know he had that really hard knockout loss to Alfredo Angulo. He had a stoppage loss to one of the Charlo brothers, and. You know, so maybe he wasn't an elite-level guy. He was a good fighter. He was a fringe contender. But, you know, he's also getting close to 40 years old now. So, he's got 4 kids. Hey, maybe be a civilian.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way to look at it. It's not that old Max Kellerman cliche that I've co-opted. Boxing is not the kind of thing to hang around in just to say you're hanging around.
Exactly.
Well, good for him. I mean, he gave it his best, that's for sure. Because I could tell it's the only fight I see him in, but I knew he had trained hard for it. He didn't let up for a second. More power to him, whatever he's doing.
That night we saw him at the Blue Horizon, and I had seen him 2007. I might have seen him fight like 3 times. I saw him fight at the one local high school, the Phoenixville High School, which was like right in his hometown, basically. And he fought there, and for a guy that he was never much of a big puncher, he blitzed this kid the first round. And I said, you know, because his nickname was Lightning, and I said, you know, he came out with a lightning start, no pun intended. But I saw him like at the Blue Horizon. I must have covered about 5 of his fights, and I'd seen him like about 7 or 8 times. And I probably covered more than 5 of his fights, and I've probably seen him closer to 10 times. Be honest, and you know, like I said, every fight, you know, it was always maximum effort. That one at the Blue Horizon that night, that was what they would call a blue plate special, as Sean O'Grady used to say on Tuesday Night Fights, because he fought this tough Mexican kid, and they went at it tooth and nail, and I mean, he beat him, but that Mexican kid earned everybody's respect that night in Philadelphia. Got a standing ovation.
Good stuff. Getting back to the boxing schedule.
Even that night, he was still sitting outside. Him and his trainer, they were sitting on the step. And myself, my dad, some other people that we had met there, when we were all walking out, I mean, people were walking up to him and shaking his hand and shaking his trainer's hand. They were like, "Yo, man, good fight." Take a backward step. He took some shots.
Well, let's get to the schedule for boxing. We don't have a whole bunch of fights this week, but we got some.
We don't have a whole bunch of fights, but we certainly have a big one.
A real big one, yeah, over in the UK. And actually, they had a bunch of conference calls. There was one for Anthony Joshua yesterday morning, and I think Monday, not Klitschko, but Deontay Wilder actually weighed in on it and talked about, you know, he hopes he gets the winner of it, but it's not a guarantee. But anyway, we're going to get to that full card in a just a second. There's another one before it, Friday night. The big one is another heavyweight fight for the WBA Intercontinental Heavyweight title over in Bulgaria. And it's Kubrat Pulev, who is 24-1, fighting Kevin Johnson, who has got 30 wins to go with 7 losses there. And we don't know the KOs, because BoxRec doesn't do that anymore. But, yeah. In London, of course, at Wembley Stadium. Anthony Joshua is going to be the hometown fighter there. But this is an unprecedented deal here with the networks. Both HBO and Showtime are going to have this broadcast on their networks. Which is just hard to believe, but they got it done. They got an agreement to show it on both channels. Anthony comes in undefeated, 18-0. Klitschko comes in at 64-4. So we're going to have to really keep an eye on this one. This is going to be good stuff. 3 titles on the line, WBA, IBF, and IBO. Go ahead, Tom.
Training, I had Matt back today. First time back since he sliced his foot open. So he came back, was training with me, and you know, he had asked me last week, you know, my thought process on it, and I was saying I'm going for Joshua, and I'm gonna, you know, basically give my breakdown of the fight right now, kind of like what I said last week. This fight, you know, it's gonna be kind of old lion versus young lion. You know, age and experience versus youth and, you know, maybe athleticism. So going into this fight, you know, you have Klitschko. He's been around 20-some years now. He's 40 years old. And when he fought Tyson Fury, I said, you know, you had 2 very good big guys that fought like it was a ballet. And it was, you know, a little bit, you know, unimpressive. It was a little bit annoying, but a lot unimpressive. Fury got the win, and could have been Klitschko aging overnight, possible. Could it have been Klitschko, you know, fighting somebody bigger than him and, you know, getting thrown off? Maybe. So, as I was talking to Matt, what we kind of both discussed tonight was, we're both, he's leaning towards Joshua, I'm going for Joshua, I'm thinking it's going to be a mid to late round stoppage, just a young guy with more gas in the tank bringing it to him, that's what I think. So as I was saying, that you have, Klitschko has the experience. And, you know, we know what he's got. He's got that hard jab, and he's got a good right hand. And he's going to try to throw the jab and grab and get the right hands in there. So if Joshua doesn't have a good chin and we can find out, you know, in stunning fashion. Hey, this guy's got a lot of talent. He doesn't have a good chin. And he could be splattered out in you know, 4 or 5 rounds.
He has a lot to lose. He really has a lot to lose if that would happen. And yeah. If Klitschko loses, I think that's a hang up the gloves. He had a great career, but I think the pressure's on Joshua Moore.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So I think in this fight, it's just going to be if Joshua's going to. I think Joshua's going to bring the fight to Klitschko. Klitschko's going to try to grab on, try to hold. He's going to try to maybe land a right hand or two here and there. But overall, honestly, I see the youth winning this one.
Yeah, that's I have to agree.
Yeah, I mean,
now, again, we could be wrong, but I mean, based on what we've seen last time and the fact that Klitschko hasn't had a fight since, what, 2015 when it happened?
Yeah, I was just looking at that. Right. Yeah, it was 2015. So he didn't fight all of last year. I mean, he waited so long for this Fury rematch. And then, you know, it was one injury after another. And then the whole drug testing deal with Fury. And then he just went off the deep end. And now he's totally out of boxing. So lots of stuff going wrong. But I don't think the ring rust is the biggest deal in this fight. I think it's more of styles. You know, Anthony is just a tremendous, like, natural athlete, like Tony said, and he's younger, and it's just, he's got more of a knockout style. Klitschko has made his money on his jab, and is Anthony just going to sit there and let Klitschko keep him off with that jab? I don't think so. So, if it goes to decision because of the jab, I mean, you're in London, so it's probably going to go to Joshua, unless it's a complete shutout, and I don't see that happening. So, yeah, I guess Klitschko's best shot is the knockout win. But, you know, you never know. Any given Sunday, even though it's Saturday. So, we'll see. Co-main event there is Scott Quigg and Virel Simeon. Both of them only have one loss. Quigg has 32 wins, 2 draws. Virel has 21 wins, no draws. And we also have got another fight, decent fight on the card. Luke Campbell versus Darlys Perez at lightweight. Campbell is 16-1. Perez is 33-2-2. But I'm definitely going to be trying to watch this heavyweight bout there this weekend. And good news is I won't be distracted by any MMA. Although some people might think that's bad news. Mixed martial arts is on a big hiatus for the big organizations. We're not going to see anything until mid-May. So, it's like the off-season all of a sudden. of course, Las Vegas also has some fights going on Saturday. That's going to be another Fox Sports 1 card, a rare Saturday card for them. Mayweather Promotions and TGB Promotions teaming up on that one. And we've got their newest acquisition, Layla. Well, not maybe newest, but a new acquisition at welterweight. Layla McCarter, female fighter who's got a record of 38-13-5, fighting Sylvia Sabados, who is 16-9. So she's getting a shot at that. And then, of course, we got our Jesus Fight of the Week on that card. Jesus Gutierrez, 14-1-1, fighting Ladarius Miller, who's 12-1. Then we have the co-main event as a middleweight bout. Nathaniel Gallimore, 17-1-1, fighting Jason Rosario, who is 12-0. And then the main event is for the interim WBA World Featherweight title and the vacant IBO World Featherweight title. And it's Carlos Zambrano, not to be confused with the retired baseball player. Yeah, he is 26-0, fighting Claudio Marrero, who is 21-1. And then over in Philadelphia at the Leocora Center, we've got a big super featherweight fight as well in the main event. For the NABF super featherweight title, we got Tevin Farmer, 24-4-1, fighting Arturo Santos Reyes, who is 19-7.
Why did you say that? I mean, like, I was just talking about Tevin Farmer last night.
Yeah, you don't see the Leocora Center here on BoxRec too much either, so that's kind of new.
Not too long. Danny Garcia fought there, and
Bernard Hopkins
fought there.
Those
are the only really two that I know of.
All right. Let's see what we got. We got anything else? Saturday still? Yep, Saturday. Galen Brown fighting over in Louisville, Kentucky on Saturday as well. Heavyweight bout. Gregory Corbin, 14-0, fighting Galen Brown, 44-36-1. He's only won one fight out of his last six, so I guess he's moved to opponent status. That's really the only good fight on that card. And we got a big event here, a little bit of a big event, main event anyway, in Sochi, Russia on Sunday. We got David Agedzhanian, who is 10-0, fighting Lorenzo Parra, who is 32-8-2. And he only has one tie and one win in his last six fights, so trying to get back on win streak there. And Monday, over in Bristol, Pennsylvania, Derek Webster at super middleweight, 22-1, fighting Frankie Philippone, who is 22-5-1. That's for the World Boxing Federation International super middleweight title. Fox Sports 1 card next Tuesday. We've got Ivan Redkach, 20 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw for him, fighting Arginis Mendez, who is 23-5-1. That's a lightweight bout there. And then co-main event is super bantamweights Brandon Figueroa, 11-0, and Luis Fernando Saavedra, who is 7-2. That's pretty much it for boxing until next Friday, which we'll talk about next Thursday. That's good stuff there.
Sounds good.
And then I do have a couple other good stories to mention.
All right, Johnny, I'm gonna be quiet.
You're breaking up, Tom. Say that again. Tom, do we lose you?
I will be. I'll be watching. See if they show the audience, Tony. I'll be looking for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty cool. I got my whole thing planned out. I'm going down to the Phillies game at 1 o'clock. So I'll be at my house probably at like 10 o'clock in the morning, grab the train, because parking down there is going to be impossible. So grab the train, grab the subway down there, head over to the Phillies for a little bit. I have the full outfit on. And then I'm going to head up to the Ben Franklin Parkway. So I'll just grab the subway almost right to where my office is, walk by, dock, so then let's see if I'm trying to make me come in and work. And instead, head over to the parkway for the yeah. So, yeah, it'll be fun, you know? I mean, they're going to have a lot of people there and a lot of events, and, you know, it should be a
Yeah. You're getting a little bit slow here on the connection. I don't know what's going on, maybe because of the rain here, but
hopefully.
All right. Yeah, so if you guys didn't hear that listening, Tony's going to the Phillies game in his super fan attire, and then he's going to the NFL draft. And he's going to be praying that the Eagles get someone good, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
I got a couple more stories before we go. Demetrius Johnson. Sorry, I don't know what you just said, Tony. Say that again, Tony. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you.
All right. So,
hello?
Yep, we can hear you now. All right, that's better. You were coming in like wicked slow for some reason. I don't know if it was my end or your end. But, yeah. Big news this week. Kind of a funny story here. Demetrius Johnson, you know, he's got the tie now with the most successful title defenses with Anderson Silva. But he's kind of making some waves because he only has one belt, you know. And maybe that's normal for boxing and everything like that. You get one belt. But apparently Daniel Cormier got 3 belts. And I don't know if it's one every defense or what the deal is that some people are getting. But Demetrius says he's got the same one that he had back in 2012 when he first won it. And they keep pretending like it's a new one when they wrap the belt around it, but then they take it back. So he says, Johnson says, I'm getting pissed off about that. I saw Daniel Cormier get 3 damn belts, so Dana White, WME, IMG, whoever writes the checks, give me 8 damn belts, please. I already have 1, so 9 if I win this one. I'll take it home. I'm going to start collecting these belts. Michael Bisping has 2 belts, and I'm just a nice guy, just a company man. I come here and fight, and then they take the belt away from me, and I'm like, all right, peace. Call me when you want me to come fight again, and that's it. But now I'm seeing these guys with 3 belts, and I'm like, I only got 1 belt, and I have to share it with 2 of my kids. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. And then, of course, going right along with it, there's another story about the UFC's financial picture. The new ownership is heavily in debt. And there's some stories about their negative rating now in investment circles. So they're rated now at having a negative outlook. But they took on recently in early April, they took on $100 million in additional loans, which really dropped their rating in the investment circles. So that's kind of interesting. So maybe that's why they can't afford a new belt for Demetrius Johnson. And as I mentioned, five weight divisions it was for Miss Serrano, Amanda Serrano. She won in five weight classes. She's the first female fighter in boxing to do so. Five weight divisions. So let's see, it's bantamweight, junior featherweight, junior lightweight, and lightweight. And she has gone down in weight to capture her belts rather than up, so that's even more impressive. Fight-fixing story here from Korea, of all places. There was a story here, kind of went under the radar. I never saw it until I just joined a new site where there's some links to new footage of, you know, UFC fights and stuff like that. Kind of a bootleg site for combat sports. But, yeah, this was a link on there, and it's saying multiple reports surfacing in Korea are citing an ongoing investigation regarding fight-fixing allegations from UFC 2015 event over in Seoul, Korea. And there is a Korean fighter whose name they tried to keep hidden, but it's pretty much understood who it is based on some of the stories about it. But they're calling him Fighter A. He agreed to take a dive for $100 million, which is roughly $88,000 over there. So that's not $100 million U.S. dollars. And he also put down a bet of 50 million won, they call him, which is $44,000, on his opponent. So it's not a very good track to take when you're trying to take a dive, is to bet on yourself. It's probably not a good way to hide it, to say the least. But what happened was they found out before the fight that this was going to happen. So Fighter A still ended up winning the contest, and then he was said to have received numerous threats and feared for his safety, which is where the police got involved, and he admitted to agreeing to throw the fight. But sounds like it's Tae Hyun Bang is the fighter, and they didn't outright name him, but some other news people have picked up on. They blurred some guy's face when they were talking about him in One Piece, and Bang was the only male fighter who won by decision, and the rest won by TKO, so that kind of narrowed it down. And they did say an unnamed 34-year-old fighter, so that was another clue. But yeah, he's this was a November 2015 card in Seoul, South Korea. Leo Kuntz was the opponent. He started out as a slight underdog, but he suddenly ballooned up to become a massive favorite over Bang, and money flowed heavily against the Korean, and then the switch happened in just a 1 to 2 hour span, which is pretty much unheard of. But Bang hurt Kuntz and scored a knockdown in the opening round, with the next two stands ending up much closer. The judges scored a 28-29, 29-28, and 29-28 in favor of the Korean. And it was their first trip to South Korea ever. And obviously, some controversy. And speaking of controversy, do you think, Tom, that you would ever see an MMA fight in the United States where a 12-year-old girl takes on a 24-year-old woman?
Oh, I heard about that. No, I never thought.
12 years old. Making her MMA debut. Granted, it's an amateur fight, and she's going to be wearing headgear, but she's fighting 24-year-old Momoko Yamazaki, this 12-year-old girl. And it's in Japan. The 12-year-old is going to make her MMA debut at Deep Jewels 16, May 20th. It's going to be contested at minimum weight, which is 95 pounds, Yamazaki, the opponent, is 24 years old. It has a 2-3 amateur record, and it's the debut for this 12-year-old. And this is pretty much the highest profile debut of a fighter under 18 since Mizuki Inoue began her professional MMA career at 16 back in 2010. But she was already a kickboxer prior to coming to MMA. So this is kind of rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. There will be no strikes.
I'm sure that one will be on YouTube.
Yeah,
day after.
And not surprisingly, a lot of people are pissed off. But, yeah, unbelievable stuff. And The Ultimate Fighter just started a new season as well. I did get a chance to watch it the other day. It's the same, on the same site that I found out the Demetrius Johnson story. I watched the full episode, and there's a lot of controversy coming out of that with Shaw. Of course, we know from past shows talking about the big issue with Uriah Faber switching camps. Uriah Faber was a mentor and a coach for TJ Dillashaw. And I believe it was after he got the title, he started changing up his fight camps and started working with Dwayne Ludwig out in Colorado. So he's flying from Sacramento, California to Colorado to split his training camps between the two places. And apparently that was fine with Uriah Faber, but then this is where it gets weird because there's a lot of people saying that TJ is like a little snake in the grass, you know, and he was trying to do all this for money. And I was actually listening to some commentary from TJ, and he said that he took Uriah to lunch to tell him that he was going to do his whole camp this time in Denver. But then he's also trying to say that Uriah gave him an ultimatum, but something doesn't sound right. So if you're going to say, all right, I'm doing my whole training camp in Colorado, then you're the one that's saying you're quitting that gym. How are you going to do your training camp there as well if you're doing everything there? Doesn't make any sense. So I think he got caught in a lie there. And Uriah Faber even took to Twitter after the show and said that it's sad to see that my former friend there is lying about me on national TV. So I don't want to take sides or anything, but it's just, you know, as an objective person looking in on that, it does seem like TJ is not being up front. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, why would you say, all right, yeah, I'm going to do my whole training camp over there and then say that, well, he kicked me out? You know, does that make sense to you guys? It doesn't to me.
No. And, yeah, there's a lot of drama on it, and it's actually got me back to watching. This is the first season I've watched in a few years. How about that?
It's very intriguing because you've got, I think the last time they did this type of lineup with comeback fighters was when Matt Serra was on the show as a contestant. And then that's when he really annoyed me too, because you could tell why he became a coach from that show, because he was always yelling so loud. He was the only voice you could hear when guys were fighting in the stands. He just has that shrill voice when he yells, and you know, he's always trying to tell people what to do back then. So that was kind of entertaining for that fact. But this one, you've got a lot of old fighters. They even brought back Jesse Taylor, who was on one of the first seasons of The Ultimate Fighter that I started watching, and he was supposed to go to the finale, and he ended up kicking out the window of the limo, going to Palace Station, and harassing some girls, messing with the security, telling everybody he's a UFC fighter. Now
you know who I am.
Yes.
You know who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Well, we'll see what he's got left.
So he's on the show, and then you've got the second coming of Gabe Rudiger on the first episode there, except he didn't have a pound and a half to lose. He had 19 or 18 pounds he was supposed to lose in 24 hours, and his coaches were, for some reason, surprised that he gave up. I mean, are you kidding me? You got to sit there and say, yeah, I'm up against a brick wall here. So they had to send him home. I forget the guy's name, but we also have one of our former guests on the show from the Fight Radio site, the podcast site that we're not using anymore, but James Krause. We just had him on. He was like one of the last episodes we had on there, and I kept looking at him and you know, reading stuff that before I watched the episode, and then I'm watching the episode. I'm thinking, I think we interviewed this guy. And sure enough, we did. So he's the favorite. He was one of the first picks. So and he actually fights in the UFC now, which only a few of the contestants are still under contract, but they're. You know, it was kind of cool because Ramzi Nijem also, I don't know if he's still under contract, but he won one of the previous episodes, previous seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. And they weren't going to do bonuses for these guys. And in the introduction of the show there, when they brought all the fighters in, they're going over the parameters. And Ramzi says, what about finishing bonuses? Dana White says, oh, there you go. He just got you guys some more money. So, they're going to give them, I believe, $5,000 bonuses for finishes. So, these guys are going to basically do it all for money this time rather than the big contract. It's going to be more about money. But one of the most fascinating additions to this episode, this season series, is Joe Daddy Stevenson, who was, I believe, on the first ever?
Yes.
First ever season.
No, he was on second. The second.
Second, right. Way back in the day, but that's going to be some good entertainment watching these guys try to prove themselves. It's the first episode featured a fight with one of the guys from a season that I interviewed a few people from for Ultimate MMA Magazine, and I didn't get to interview Gilbert, but I got his opponent. His first opponent on that show that generated a lot of controversy because they didn't think he was ready for him. And his own teammates were criticizing him, and he wasn't even the one that picked the fight, you know, so he was real pissed off about that. And then sure enough, he's in one locker room, and his opponent for this one, Seth Brzezinski, is in the other locker room, and he starts to say, well, you know, he shouldn't have picked me to go against him, because I've beaten guys better than him and people that beat him. So Brzezinski obviously took it the wrong way because he overheard it and got in his face. Then, instead of them fighting before the fight, it ended up being T.J. Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt, the coaches, got into it. Cody grabbed him by the neck, and there was a little bit of a tussle, and T.J. laughed it off. But, yeah, it's going to be a tense season with them two because they do not like each other, because Cody is from Uriah's camp, who's still with him and still thinks of him as a mentor, and obviously TJ has some issues with that whole scenario. So they almost got into it, and then Gilbert, who I've always liked as a fighter, I think he's a great guy. He's conscious that this is really the last chance for him. And he went in there and used his wrestling to his advantage, threw a lot of punches, and for one of the first times ever in a UFC fight on the show or otherwise, you got to see a guy yelling out one of his favorite mantras, which is hard work and dedication. But he wrote, just said, kept saying, hard work, as he's punching the shit out of the guy. So that was funny at the end of it. But yeah, he's just basically proved that's what it's all about. He had to work harder than everybody else. And he got the win and looked good doing it. And then James Krause was supposed to be in the other fight against the guy that got thrown off for missing weight. So he won't fight for a couple weeks. And that was another bit of controversy because TJ was pissed off that Cody could just make a phone call and bring another guy in. And then Krause, who had been working all week to make weight and getting ready for his fight with the other guy, doesn't get to fight now. So it's going to be... It's going to take a little while, I guess, either next episode or whenever they're going to set up the fight with the new guy coming in. So now TJ's pissed off, not only because he loses a guy, but because he loses the fight that he picked. But, you know, they're bringing a new guy in, and, you know, he didn't pick him to fight that guy. He thought he was going to be able to pick a whole new fight. But so it's almost like Cody got both first fight picks. And they're doing a little different this year. They're doing alternating fight picks. So instead of, you know, if you win, you get to control the next fight. They don't want to end up with a situation every year now where, you know, one team has to fight each other all the time. So they're doing it just alternating coaches. Each fight, different coach picks. So we'll see how it goes. But it's definitely going to be a great season, I think. They did say that they were going to get rid of this show. There was news that they might just totally scrap it. So I think this is the shakeup that they needed to keep it going. It was losing ratings for a couple years, but I think this will bring it back to the top. But we'll definitely be watching. And that's about it. That's all the big stuff I've got for this week. But definitely, if you guys get a chance and you want to hear some good Dana White bashing, I put the interview with Ally Kinta on the top of our blog. I did some commentary, of course, too. I couldn't resist. That's on. It's about 25 minutes long, but he's got some really good points, and it's really interesting. It's funny. And it's very entertaining. He's got a lot of good perspective.
All right, show's coming on. I'm bailing out. Talk to you guys next week.
All right, take it easy.
Let's go.
Adios, folks.
All right, well, I'm going to bail myself and get some sleep.
All right.
Big day tomorrow.
Yeah, go Phillies. No, go Phillies. Right. Go Phillies and go Eagles.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man. Hasta la vista.
Have a good night.